Hello, everybody. I'm Warren Ackerman at Barclays in the consumer team. It's my great pleasure to welcome Jørgen Esser to this webinar today, following the publication of their Q1 sales results this morning. Welcome, Jørgen. Thanks for your time on a busy day. The format today is really going to be your questions. I've got my own questions, but I'm going to try and focus on your questions. So if you do have a question, please send me an email on warren.ackerman@barclays.com, or if you have Bloomberg, I'm also available on Bloomberg IB. There's already quite a few that have come in, Jørgen. Some people have listened to the call this morning, some haven't. So there's in terms of the audience. But I want to start just with one that's come in from a number of people, which is really on EDP, and this is now the second consecutive quarter of positive volume mix. And I think the question is, what are the main drivers behind that, and how have you been able to do that despite some disruptions in Europe? Maybe you can just explain the kind of the key building blocks behind that decent performance in EDP in Q1.
Thank you, Warren. Thank you, and good afternoon, good morning to all of you. Yeah, it's true that has been a good start into the year for us. In fact, across all the categories, and as you say, Warren, we are very pleased, particularly with the second consecutive quarter of positive volume mix in dairy and plant-based, which is, I would say here also the consequence of all the good job which has been done across the different zones. When you look at the results we have in North America, the results we have in Europe, the results we have in countries like Japan, but also a number of countries in Latin America and Africa, it's going across the board everywhere in the right direction. Obviously, most in the focus, our North American and European business. And you know that in both of those businesses, we have been using the last 18 to 24 months to reset the portfolio, to refocus the portfolio on where we believe that we have truly differentiated assets, which means we have been cleaning quite a bit of SKUs. We took out some 20% of SKUs in Europe. And since a couple of months for Europe and since a couple of quarters for North America, we have been in a very significant way reinvesting behind it. And what we are seeing now over the last two quarters are basically the benefits of this more streamlined portfolio and of the reinvestment we did behind the different brands. What is, I would say, reassuring us is two elements. First, our market shares are going in the right direction. Which is true for North America, which is true for Europe. I mean, the Nielsen data is pretty transparent. You see that now it's since the month of October that we are positive in market share in Europe. And this is great after many, many years of decline. But the second element is probably equally important, which is that when you look at the underlying category data for dairy and for yogurt in the US and in Europe, the category is in growth and the category is in volume growth, which means that the consumer is back to the shelf. The consumer is better and better understanding the health benefits of that category. And that obviously bodes well for us. And it means it's a very sound base to work on also in the quarters to come.
Okay, thank you, Jørgen. There's a lot of questions coming in on the topic of innovation, because that's one of the biggest changes that we've seen on the portfolio. And I'll try and paraphrase. There's four or five different types of questions on the same theme. But they're asking, clients are asking about the innovation funnel. You know, you've got the protein platform that you've talked about being a €1 billion platform. So the question is, what is the revenues now on protein? Is it close to €1 billion, or are we approaching €1 billion? Which countries do you still have to roll out? And then when are we going to see some interesting new innovations on Actimel and Activia, your other two big brands within EDP?
Yeah, you are absolutely right to say that the high protein platform is today the growth driver number one in our EDP universe. It's something which we have been rolling out across all year 2023 after the very good success we saw in the US and in Japan, which were some of the early movers. It has changed the game for us in Brazil during all year 2023, as this became also our single biggest platform there. And in Europe, we are now since a couple of quarters in rollout. I mean, you know that we launched in the UK a couple of months ago with very, very good results. We are launching as we speak in Germany, and we still have a few countries in Europe where it's not yet present. But the good news is that wherever we are launching, the consumer reaction are extremely positive, the retailer reaction are extremely positive, and we have a very distinctive asset with those. And I don't know if you see that in the camera with these, I would say, black labeled high protein products, which we have been launching in a format which was more spoonable first, so in a, I would say, traditional yogurt format. But we are more and more introducing also other formats, including drinks, beverages, which are, I would say, more relevant for on-the-go consumption and consumption, especially of people who are doing sports in a frequent manner in gyms. So very happy with that, getting to a 1 billion euro platform very soon. But I would say the underlying growth potential is really great. Last comment on this one. You saw also this morning when I talked about North America and our Oikos Black brand, which is basically the platform which we have in the US, that we are going even beyond beverages. We have now double compartment packaging also for more snacking occasions. So we are really entering into more and more occasions with that platform. It's an interesting platform, this high protein platform, because it's not only addressing the needs of consumers who want to control their calorie intake, but it's also for those people who are potential users of GLP-1, because for them it delivers the protein they need to protect their muscles and their bones while managing their weight. So overall, this is really a growth driver number one. We see very, very good results on Actimel. This is really a brand which has been rejuvenated with a lot of success across all the countries. Good performance, market share wins. We are back to a much more functional communication on the brand. This is paying out well for us. And you will see us, in fact, innovating in that space as we go through this year, 2024 and 2025, with some very exciting news. It's not yet introduced to the retailer, so I cannot share too much, but there's very good stuff ongoing. And same for Activia. I mean, it's true that gut health became a very prominent topic in all social media. And it's really a wave which we want to benefit from. We have been standardizing and harmonizing the way the brand is communicating to the consumer in around the world. It has been a bit fragmented in the past. We are now really going back to a very, let's say, strategic way of communication, again, elevating functionality. And here also, we have a number of innovations which will go into the market during the year. A number of them will be showcased when we are in the CME in June. So overall, we are really happy with what we are seeing on dairy. We are really happy what we are seeing on the category. And we are really happy with the way the retailers are welcoming our proposals on how to cluster the shelf in more clear swim lanes by immunity, high protein, indulgence, and so on. So we are pretty much on track vis-à-vis the plan we shared with you basically a year ago.
I've had one follow-up on that, Jürgen, from somebody that said that they're starting to see private label entering the high protein yogurt market. They've seen it in the UK, for example. How is Danone thinking about private label in this specific subcategory, which you said is your fastest growing part of EDP? Is it good because it grows the category, or is it bad because then there's a share issue, or is it so small it's not an issue? Maybe you can address that specifically on
Yeah,
high protein.
I think that is the high protein space is a space which comes with very distinctive benefits which need communication. So on one side, we welcome the fact that many other players are trying to get into the space because it will create awareness of it. Finally, I think consumers will go for those ones who are offering the best product. And I don't know if you tried the high protein variants we have in the UK. When you are compacting proteins, you need really to take care of the taste. And because we have all the good experience from our medical nutrition business, so for example, I have here a high protein medical product in my hand, we know how to manage great taste despite high concentration of protein. So I think we have here technology assets which are difficult to get for many other players, which will help us to continue to be leader in that space also in the quarters and years to come.
I've got a US investor's asking a question about the new FDA approval around the diabetes claims that you can make now in yogurts. That seems to be something new. Can you maybe explain what's happened, and can you use that to your advantage to make specific claims on pack? And how meaningful do you think that ruling from the FDA is on diabetes?
I believe that's, in fact, that it's true that the FDA recently approved that the yogurt categories and players can indeed claim the benefits vis-à-vis diabetes type 2. I believe it's a very positive sign for the category. It means that the health authorities confirm that yogurt has a positive impact on health. And today, this is on diabetes type 2. There's been a lot of public conversation about how yogurt can support those people who take GLP-1 medication and so on and so on. So yogurt is back into, I would say, going back into a good space. It's very clear health benefits, so it can only be positive. That's for Danone, that's for the whole sector. And obviously, we want to benefit as much as possible from that. So yes, we are working on how we can translate that into our brand communication, especially for those products which offer plain yogurt, all the best you can get out of this fermented milk without the negatives of sugar or fat.
Okay. There's quite a lot of questions, as you would imagine, Jürgen, around pricing in EDP in light of this temporary disruption as you're trying to take selective pricing. I think you described it this morning as. Can you maybe walk us through where you are still seeing inflation in Europe? Is milk prices going back up? Which kind of SKUs are you thinking about trying to get pricing is the question. And, you know, how can you be sure this is only a temporary disruption? We've seen before where there has been delistings, it can be 3 months, but you sound confident it's not that. So if you can maybe address that, would be super.
Yeah, maybe starting with the inflation point, Warren. It's true that inflation has been coming down quarter by quarter. Also, when we going from Q4 last year into Q1 this year, inflation is really normalizing. I would say we are back to normal. While we, of course, need to be a bit careful with that, with the volatility we have recently seen because of the happenings in the Middle East, which we don't know how they translate into a commodity prices. But so far, I would say we are really where we thought we would be. There's still a bit of inflation. Key drivers are some agricultural ingredients, sugar, which is still very high, sea freight without any surprise, and labor cost. But it's also fair to say that many other commodities have been going downwards. You talked about milk and liquid milk. Liquid milk in many markets has been stabilizing, yet at very high levels, especially in Europe. And you look at France, Spain, or Poland, which are three important markets for us. But again, this has been stabilizing. So for us, there's a bit of inflation. This is why we have said already at the beginning of the year that we will not go for broad-based pricing. We will go for only very selective pricing. And selective doesn't mean country by country, but also product range by product range, in order to make sure that those products which are positioned at excess level of prices or entry level of price, that we don't move the price up here, while we would do more selective pricing on where we have really differentiated product portfolio, which is able to carry a higher price. This has been the strategy from the beginning, which is true for Europe and which is true for North America. In North America, we have completed our round of price increases. In Europe, we made very good progress. It's true that, as you say, the months of March and the months of April, we have seen some disruptions of shipments while doing those negotiations. But the vast majority of the negotiations is now closed. So as we speak, we are going back to business as usual. So yes, March and April, we will see a little bit of dip in market shares. But we believe it was important to stay firm in order to reassure the reinvestment journey we are in order to reassure that we can solidify the competitive growth momentum we have in Europe. So I think we are pretty much on track, and it was the right thing to do for us.
And I don't know how much you can share, Jürgen. I guess, you know, commercial sensitivities around the country, retailers specifically, but there's quite a few people asking, is Jürgen able to kind of, is this mainly a Germany issue, or is it kind of like big retailers, small retailers, Spain? Is it, because it sounds like, you know, it's almost a point of growth in Europe. Is there any more that you can share, or is it just like usual
But
services?
it's obviously a retailer by retailer discussion. Then, of course, you know that there's also more and more European alliances
Yeah.
going into the negotiation. The good news again is that the majority of these elements are now behind us, which I think means that we can go back to focus on business as usual and getting volume mix again up. We really would, I mean, our ambition is really to continue what we have seen for 5 months in a row now, which is growing our market shares, growing our levels of distribution, growing our share of shelf, and making sure that the innovations we are getting into the market will perform. And so far, we are really confident with that. So, voilà, this is where
Okay.
we are today.
Okay. And maybe sort of drilling into the out of home channel, because I remember last year when I did a chat with Pablo Pavesi, he was talking about 30% growth coming in Europe in EDP as you were kind of focusing on the coffee shops, the Alpro and the train stations and the, you know, the different out of home channels. Has that growth slowed down, or is it still at that level? Because I, and then the question's coming in, how big is this out of home for Danone in Europe? I think you said this morning that your ambition is to grow the channel as you're focusing on it. I don't know whether you can put any numbers on whether the growth is still that dynamic and what the weighting of out of home is within EDP specifically.
So first, the channel continues to be extremely dynamic, which is true across categories. When you look at the weight of the channel in our today's portfolio, obviously away from home is the strongest in waters, because historically we have been focusing, especially with brands like Evian, on away from home.
Yeah.
And we're continuing to grow fast, by the way, in waters also on that channel. We have also you know, a decent weight of the portfolio in plant-based. And I would say, especially in the second half of last year, we put a lot of efforts on Alpro being more present in away from home. And this has resulted now in a quite good share of our net sales in that channel, and it's growing very fast. And in a way, dairy is I would not say is a new kid on the block, but in dairy, we are just introducing a number of formats which will help to conquer this channel. Because it's true, it's a channel where spoonable products, classical spoonable yogurt, is less relevant. It's a channel where you need elements like the drinkable formats I was talking about earlier, and we are introducing a number of those innovations, by the way, in Europe as in North America. In North America, Q1 has been a quarter. We have been launching beverages on several of our blend platforms to be more relevant for that channel. So yes, it's strategic for us. Yes, we believe it will be one of the key growth drivers in EDP, but also across the portfolio in North America and Europe.
Okay, thank you, Jürgen. I'm going to move switch gears to the US because it is pretty key. It's doing well. There's a lot of questions coming in around the coffee creamers or coffee creations, I should say. It's been very dynamic. I think people want to try and understand a little bit how big a market, how big an opportunity is coffee creamers, and what market share does Danone have in the category? And I've had one other kind of bolt on. Is Danone winning because Nestle's had some production capacity issues on Coffee Mate? Is that part of the reason why it's so strong, or is it not a factor? And yeah, so if you can maybe share a little bit of your vision and around this category. We don't hear so much about coffee creamers, but given the disposal of Horizon Organic, I guess it's becoming a bigger part of the overall portfolio.
Coffee creamers and coffee creations, as we call it, overall has been very dynamic quarter after quarter. Q1 again growing in double digit. Two important legs within that coffee creations category for us. One is our ready-to-drink coffee business, and I don't know if that's visible in the camera. It's our Stoke ready-to-drink coffee beverage, something which has been launched only a couple of years ago, which became very, very prominent on shelf. It's one of the fastest growing SKU in the coffee space. I don't know if you had the chance to see our Super Bowl advertising, which was very impactful. And while we had been growing that brand mostly on multi-serve format, so in this large format I just showed you, we are, as we speak, rolling it out into the away-from-home channels, the small format. So fantastic growth momentum here. It's becoming a sizable platform with, I believe, a lot of potential. Next to it, coffee creamers. Coffee creamers, a quite vibrant segment or category. Within that category, we have been winning share, and we've been winning share quite consistently. So it's not a one-quarter wonder. But you heard me talking about winning share now for a couple of quarters in a row. What is helping us more structurally is the innovations we have been putting in place. I don't know if you saw this morning, Warren, in the presentation of North America on the slide, I put a picture of, I put a picture of Remix Oikos, but we launched a cold form, which is like a spray, into the market, so to enhance your coffee experience, which had a fantastic start, which was one of the key drivers to drive our market shares up over the last couple of months. And besides that, we have been very successful also launching a plant-based coffee creamers in the US and rolling it out and getting distribution for it. So it's a fantastic space for us. We have, with International Delight, a fantastic brand, and I think there's a lot of growth potential there.
That's very interesting, Jürgen. It's good to hear you talking more about it. Somebody's asking, how big is Stoke in terms of revenues? Because it's growing rapidly. Could you sort of size it for us?
Yeah, it's now a platform of a few hundred million dollars. So it's quite sizable.
Okay.
And it has been, I think we have been launching that, what is it, probably 5-6 years ago. Not more than that. So really a fantastic brand. Our job with Stoke is to create even more brand awareness. And this is why I was mentioning the Super Bowl campaign, which has been really a big boost to the awareness of the brand. And today, when you go into multi-serve, it has the fastest rotation across all ready-to-drink coffees on the shelf.
Somebody's asking, that's great to hear that, Jürgen, but what's the category growth rate for coffee creamers long-term? What kind of numbers would you... sort of looking through the cycle, what would you peg it at?
Well, I think that when you look at the underlying category dynamics now over the last couple of months, it has been quite dynamic. People more and more again preparing their coffee at home is definitely something which is driving consumption. And we see penetration going up. So I think the space offers also long-term, very interesting growth rates, and us having one, if not the best brand in the space is fantastic. Besides that, we have been putting a lot of focus on also the away from home occasion, so single serve portions. So going into universities, into schools, into gas stations, we are rolling out very fast distributions, which is also driving a good part of our growth. So there's more to come.
Okay, that's very encouraging. And then while staying on the topic of the US, Silk, your plant-based brand, I think you've been very explicit with us that you took maybe too much pricing relative to competition, the price gap opened up. You've taken the pricing down to make it a bit more competitive. And so the market share is stabilizing. But what are you actually doing to renovate the brand to make it more interesting for consumers? And what is it actually declining still, the brand? And what are you budgeting for the back half on Silk? Is it going to be back mid-single digit growth? What's happening on that brand?
You are absolutely right that we went a bit far last year on price. So this one we corrected, and I would say that more tactical move is paying out, but this is of course not going to get us back into a sustainable growth trajectory. So what we are doing is really to apply the playbook of Alpro, and what we've been doing with Alpro, and this has worked very well for us over the last two, three quarters, is to really link the brand and the ingredients of the brand to certain consumption moments and occasions. We have been very, very clearly targeting the coffee space with the oat segment particularly. We have been very clearly targeting the cereals breakfast moment with the almond variant, and very clearly targeting the I would say snacking moment, drinking a glass of plant-based with the soy variant. And that's working very well for us in Europe. It shows that penetration is going up. It shows that the brand health is increasing. And that's exactly the playbook we're going to apply for North America. Am I confident that the dynamics will improve as we go through the year? Definitely, yes. I believe that we are on the right path for it. What will help here is that the category overall is getting a bit more traction. You know, it was a bit slow moving over the last quarter as a category, but here we see a bit more dynamic recently. So if that proves to be stable, it should also support to get a better dynamic into that part of the portfolio in the U.S.
Okay, that's interesting. I've got a question coming in, Jürgen. It's a bit of a basic kind of portfolio question, but with the Horizon business, it was still in the numbers in Q1, right? And it gets deconsolidated from Q2, I think I'm right in saying. How much does that change the top line growth margins of the U.S. business? Because it was quite a big chunk of revenue. And then post Horizon being deconsolidated, what is the makeup of your U.S. business split between coffee creamers, plant-based, and traditional yogurts? You know, kind of ballpark, because I guess the economics of your U.S. business potentially can change quite significantly post the scope change. Any color on that would be helpful.
Yeah, look, I mean, Horizon Organic indeed has been sold, and the deal has been closed at in the month of March, so very, very recently, which is still in the numbers of Q1. It's been 3% of company net sales, so indeed has been quite significant for the North American platform. So when you look now at the remaining part of the portfolio, you have the coffee creations, which is really becoming, together with yogurt, the two biggest and almost equal weight elements in the portfolio. The two combined are way more than half of our North American platform now. And then the rest is composed of the other elements, which you know well, which is plant-based. And waters plus our specialized nutrition business, but you know that these are smaller platforms for us. So yes, the relative weight of coffee creations, particularly but also yogurt, is pretty much increasing here, which I think bodes well for the trajectory of our North American business.
I've got a question coming in, Jürgen, about the oat part of the market in the US has been very dynamic. And the question is, what is Danone's capability in oat? Do they feel that they're underinvested there? And is it not easier to buy and not build?
I believe that when you look into the market in North America and in Europe, and in Europe we are by far leader of the market with the Alpro brand. North America, the competitive set is a little bit different. You have four or five players very prominently present, especially in modern retail, all of them, including us, offering an old variant. So it's not a question of brand for me. I think we have a brand platform which is able to get a higher share in the market. Now we need to position it rightly. And that's exactly right. The job which I was describing. Oat is and remains the fastest growing ingredient space in the market for one single reason, which is that oat goes with coffee. So it's the most commonly used ingredient. And this is where we need to win. We have not done a fantastic job there over the last quarters, and this is what we're going to turn around. But I'm really confident that we'll be able to do so.
The investors come back and say, how are you going to turn it around? Because, you know, it's easy saying it's going to be turned around, but there's obviously incumbents like Oatly that are there, and your portfolio is probably still a bit overweight soy, which has been an ingredient that's been struggling for a long time. It was described as a sleeping giant, but still seems to be sleeping. Just maybe pushing you a little bit on what's going to actually change.
Oh, that's a fair push. In fact, contrary to what you just said, soy has been stabilizing.
Okay.
It's not anymore in decline. It's true that
not growing though.
This is where we historically have been strong and where we continue to be very strong. So that that is good news. And on oats, again, it's about occasions and it's about the way we position the brand in the way from home, especially where it's relevant in coffee shops and coffee houses. And this is what we're going to do. In that sense, I would say exactly the job of Alpro. You know that Alpro has been also a bit under pressure when you look back a year ago. And today we are winning, and we are winning in oats. So in that sense, we have proven that it works, and this is why we are confident.
Okay. I think we've done a fair bit on the US there. The other topic on EDP, a final one before I move to other topics, is just on the value creation model outside of developed markets. We've talked a little bit about Latin America, what you've done on Paulista, licensing the brand. But Africa is also quite a big chunk of the volume, and it is holding back the volume mix a little bit as you're still, you know, improving the SKUs. Can you maybe kind of walk through a little bit what your strategy is? How much is emerging markets holding back the real potential for the vol mix on EDP? And what are you doing to improve the performance of Morocco, West Africa, and Latin America?
Yeah, I would say that we are making very good progress on that front, especially Africa EDP. The trends are definitely improving. You mentioned Morocco, where we are on a pretty good way, where we have done a lot to clean the portfolio, and where today the portfolio is very different than 12 months ago. So we feel good about where we are in EDP Africa. I would say the same for Mexico, which is performing well. When you just look at the numbers holding us today a bit back, is the Brazilian case. Yeah. Which we believe was the right thing to do. It's quite sizable in the numbers. It's quite sizable when you look at the vol mix of the overall EDP numbers. Mm-hmm. But it's the right thing to do in order to get the gross margin up and to change very much the growth profile of EDP in Latin America and EDP of emerging markets. But I would say we made very good progress when you look over emerging markets. I think that this year we will have still a little bit to digest of this negative effect from Brazil, but then we should have the majority of the impacts behind us. So in that sense, we are pretty happy. I would like to use the occasion, Warren, just to mention one element which we don't talk a lot about, but which is our Japanese business, which is a bit hidden within the China region platform. Yeah. Which is consistently growing double digits, which is a business for us, which is very much skewed towards functionality. And as you may know, first, Japan is one of the biggest dairy markets of the world. And secondly, it's definitely the most functional of the world. So for us, everything we do in Japan is not only to win in Japan, but also to export the good learnings and the good inspiration we get and functionality into the other markets. And that starts to work. So, and this is why you will hear me more prominently speaking also about this Japanese platform in the future.
Okay, and just on the kind of algorithm for the vol mix on EDP, so we had like 2% in Q4. In
Yep.
Q1, it's just below one. You told us there's 1 point drag from the disruption in Europe, plus the licensing deal on Paulista, which you said would continue for the rest of the year. But you've got more innovations coming. You've got a little bit of follow over disruption in April, but then you'll be fine in May and June. So, you know, what's reason? There's lots of kind of moving pieces. What would, you know, if it, and comps are quite easy as well. That's the other thing. What would be reasonable kind of run rate as we look into the back half on the on what would you be happy with on vol mix as we're kind of exiting this year into next year?
I mean, a few things. You're absolutely right that the Paulista thing is going to stay for year 2024. It is what it is. The European element probably will be as big in Q2 as in Q1 because you were impacted in March and April, so it should be fairly the same impact on the two quarters. And then obviously our ambition is to see the numbers going up as you say, as we travel through the year and the second part of the year, knowing that also the pricing component will co come down sequentially. The volume mix component, and this is true for EDP and this is true for the other parts of our portfolio, should become more prominent in the overall growth algorithm. Innovation is key for that. I totally agree with you. As much as driving the core up, because innovation alone will not make it. And so we will stay very consistent with reinvesting behind the core, pushing the high protein platform, pushing the more functional parts of our portfolio, and introducing scalable innovation. So that's absolutely the name of the game.
Okay. All right. Listen, Jürgen, I want to move off. Unless other people come back on EDP, I want to move off that onto specialized nutrition. I was quite struck by your comment this morning about you're seeing the market in Chinese infant formula improving a little bit as we're moving from old recipe to new recipe. You talked about the mother and baby store channel and e-commerce channel being a bit more dynamic. Can you maybe go into a bit more detail of what's happening and what kind of market growth are you seeing right now by channel? Are you able to kind of you used to give us the some of the growth rates by the different channels of direct and indirect e-com versus other channels. I don't know if you have that available or not, but it was that comment is quite intriguing. It's the first time we've heard some positive commentary on China market. Yeah, color would be great.
Yeah, on the category itself, the category is still negative, which is not a surprise because birth rates in 2023 have been declining, as we know.
Yeah,
When
but
I was
how
mentioning this
sorry,
morning
sorry, Jürgen,
that
how negative are we talking? Just to clarify, what kind of negative for the
well, you saw
category?
that. I mean, the birth rates and the category, depending on the source you want to believe in, are somewhere between 8 and 10 or 12% down. So that depends on what source you find credible. Not so easy to get a consensus around that. But there's two elements which I think are interesting. The first element is that we see pricing pressure easing a bit, which is probably linked to the fact that more and more people have now liquidated their old stocks of the old recipe. But we do also see that the volume dynamics for the very early, so the youngest children, the youngest babies are getting a little better. So now, too early to celebrate. Some people believe that the year of the dragon is going to help that a little bit. That is what we will need to see. But already the fact that the pricing pressure on the sector is easing a bit is, I would say, an element of good news. In that context, what we are seeing is that mom and baby stores, which have been pulling the growth, especially in low-tier cities in the, let's say, last 2 years, this is a bit overtaken, in fact, by the online channels. So people are again back on online channel. where they have a larger assortment than in the mom and baby channel, and where they have immediate access to all the innovations, which it may take some time to get the innovations in their local mom and baby store, which is, by the way, also true for us. You know that we have been launching a number of innovations under the Essensis frame, especially on C-section. Good start, very encouraging start. And obviously, this is not yet available everywhere in mom and baby stores. So online channel more dynamic, good for us because we have a relatively higher weight in online channels. This is the way we have been building our company over the last 10 years. So in that sense, it offers opportunities for us. So we closed also the first quarter in positive net sales. And we continue to grow share. And we have still a number of innovations to hit the market, including a new tourist, which we have been discussing, which will come towards the end of this year.
I've had an investor come back just asking about that category growth rate, that minus 8, minus 10. That's the birth rate. But obviously, your portfolio, you're kind of relatively underweight on stage 1 versus stage 2, stage 3, stage 4. So just because the birth rate is that low, that doesn't necessarily mean that applies to your portfolio.
Yeah, I would say that when you, because the trend has been ongoing now for 2 or 3 years, that the market is in decline. It has been quite broad-based across the stages. What is more interesting is the fact that we are now touching the ultra-premium segment. It's something where we have not been playing historically, which is between a quarter and a third of the market, which is, of course, for us opening an opportunity with Essensis and Noturis kicking in, because those are products which are sold at a higher price point. And it's the first time since many, many years that we have the opportunity to go there. So that is something we really want to drive fast in that category.
Because I remember back in the day, you know, your Aptamil brand was split between English label and Chinese label. And on Chinese label, you only had Aptamil Platinum and Aptamil entry level, but you're segmenting the brand now with Essensis on C-section. How much segmentation of that brand can you do? And then what does that help? How does that help you actually drive growth in the mother and baby store channel and the e-com channel? And what kind of premium price are these new innovations coming out relative to the baseline Aptamil pricing in China?
Yeah, you're absolutely right that historically we had the Chinese label, as you say it, only two variants of Aptamil.
Yeah.
We are now launching a number of innovations which are very clear need state based, like C-section or mixed feeding. They are coming into a market with a price premium between 10 and 15%. Which again is the first time we are tapping into this ultra premium segment. Some of those elements, like the C-section one, was available through international label in the past, and is still, of course. But now is the first time we have it with a Chinese label, and that's of course very important because, as we know, the Chinese consumer is more and more favoring Chinese labels. And so important for us to finally tap into that territory.
And how much distribution gain should we expect from what's already been launched? You mentioned it hasn't gone everywhere. So should we expect growth to accelerate as you're kind of pipeline filling new distribution, white space in China? And maybe on top of that, have you got any other segmentation of the brand for the second half of this year?
It's not so much about pipeline filling. The way we have been introducing is really region by region, and we are still in rollout phase, because the way you do it is that you get traction with healthcare professionals so that they recommend for C-section born babies our formulas, or when you do mixed feeding, our formulas. And so this is going on as we speak. So especially the Essensis rollout will be taking us busy all the year. And this is why we have scheduled the Noturis rollout, which is our most advanced science, towards the end of the year. And we were preparing that very actively. This should allow us to continue to beat the market, as we have been beating the market now for more than quarters, we can say years. And that's the ambition we have. We want to continue beating the market also moving forward.
Somebody's asking, Jürgen, is one of the reasons why the market is improving slightly, because we've seen the exit of some of the smaller local Chinese players because of the new regulations, that they were still hanging around beyond the start of the year, but that's now sort of cleaner baseline. Is that also a reason, or are they still there?
Well, on the category, I'm not sure that. I mean, on the volume sold per se, I don't think it has an impact. On the price at HF, I believe it has a positive impact, as said, because there's less pressure from smaller players trying to liquidate their old stocks. So in that sense, I think it contributes to category dynamics, not on the volumes consumed. I don't believe so. Are we today totally at the end of the story? Not yet. We were expecting it to be finished. There's still some stock out there, but I believe that in the next very few weeks and months, that will be cleaned, and then this will be behind us.
And what was China infant milk formula growth in the quarter? Somebody's asking.
Yeah, well, it's contributing positively to the net sales growth of specialized nutrition in China. Obviously, as you can imagine, our more clinical and medical business is growing way faster than our IMF business. But I'm pretty happy that IMF has been contributing again positively to the net sales growth in China.
Okay. And just maybe a word on medical. Somebody's asking about the regulatory changes, and you're talking about some new products. We've had some feedback that the pharmacy channel in China is opening up to medical products for the first time from zero. So is that an opportunity as well as the home care channel? Or how big an opportunity is this, is really the question.
That's a good point. So far, we have been playing in China almost exclusively on the hospital channels with our tube feeding products, and I happen to have one here. That's the way it looks like. Okay. And so this is what we have been mostly selling through hospital channels. We have been launching not so long time ago oral nutrition for certain patients, cancer patients, frailty patients. So these compact protein bottles, under drug license, which is important, which goes through pharmacies, as you say. And on top of that, and this has been one of the key growth drivers of the first quarters, we have been introducing our Nutrizon powder. So for people coming also out of hospital for post-hospital treatment, and this is going very well for us. So this is non-described through pharmacies, and this is where probably we have the biggest opportunity today. So while on the tube feeding, the opportunity lies in growing our distribution to more hospitals, especially in low-tier cities, the bigger opportunity is even on catching the post-discharge moment and helping the patient with more specific medical nutrition afterwards. So fast growth, you know that Q1, we were running on a pretty high base in China last year, and still we delivered very good growth. So a very good start into the year.
Okay. I'm going to quickly dash onto water. Obviously, the standout was the 27% growth in Mizone. Jürgen, quite a few questions coming in asking, is that like a real number? Is that an underlying number? Is there kind of some inventory build there or some timing around Ramadan? What would you expect the growth rate in Mizone to be in the big season, which I guess is Q2 sell-in? Because I think people are a little bit it's been growing double digit, but suddenly 30% is a bit different.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, we have been talking consistently about double-digit growth in 2023. It's where the first quarter has been particularly high because we finished last year with a very low stock. So there was a bit of stock rebuilt in Q1. So I would not, I would like to moderate expectations a bit down that you may not see another 30% on the quarters to come. Having said that, the category is dynamic.
Yeah.
So we see good underlying growth and we continue to win share. And especially with the rejuvenated mix for Mizone, plus the innovation we launched on the Chinese chart of this morning, we put the picture of the electrolytes, the enhanced electrolytes version of Mizone, which is having a very good start for us, which makes us confident that we will see good growth numbers also moving forward. So when last year I was commenting that we are confident that the turnaround is actually working, I think that is indeed getting confirmed.
Okay, another question on water is, somebody's asking, how big is Evian, Volvic and Badoit within Danone's overall water portfolio? And those international premium water brands, what is the difference in the growth and margins for those three relative to the rest of the portfolio? And can you make them a bigger part of the overall portfolio to kind of valorize? Is that part of the strategy, is the question?
When you look at that group of, global brands, and you mentioned them, especially Evian, but in the end, we put together Evian, Volvic and Badoit, as you said. It's the biggest platform we have in the waters division. It's mostly sold in Europe. And in Europe itself, it represents the vast majority of our sales. We have a few local brands, but they are contributing a minor part. But it's also fair to say that Evian is quite present in the US, it's quite present in Asia. It's a business which is fairly premium, especially in the moment it starts to travel, because then Evian is mostly sold through away from home channels. And when we are getting into these premium occasions, it also means premium price positions and good underlying profitability. So for us, having those brands and especially Evian growing bodes well for the underlying profitability. And as you know, Warren, it's the same for Mizone, which is priced at a relatively high price point and is also coming with very good margins.
Okay, I've got a few general questions. We've talked a little bit about the categories, Jürgen. Somebody's quite a few questions about the Olympics, talking about what activations is Danone doing around the Olympics. I noticed you're sponsoring the GB and the French athletes. I'm not sure who you want to win more medals, the Brits or the French, but is it something that is going to be a big deal for brand equity? Could it actually lead to a bit of a boost?
Very intentionally, we got into that commitment with the Olympic Committee for two reasons, I would say. First, when you think about the way we position our portfolio, which is all about health, with a very strong underlying sustainability asset, I think it fits very well to the topic of the Olympic Games. We are sponsored with our dairy platform, particularly. We are launching, as we speak, specific SKUs, which we have co-designed with athletes of the Olympics, which have an extra content of protein, which are hitting the market as we speak. So especially our dairy platform will be extremely visible in France, but I would say across Europe, and you will see us making a lot of noise around it. So in that sense, yes, it's not only a nice PR element. We really want to use it to create awareness about our brands, to create awareness about the innovations, especially in our dairy platform, and it should be helping us to solidify our market share trajectory, which we have gotten into. Overall, of course, and back to your waters question, having so many millions of visitors coming to France, traveling into France, should also help to make some of our other brands very visible, including the Evian brand, obviously. So we are going to maximize that opportunity.
Okay. There's a question coming in about free cash flow, the big increase in 23. And the question is, I've seen in Barclays research that you think, Warren, the free cash flow can step up from 2 billion to 3 billion euros per annum. Does Jürgen agree with that? And if he does, what are the drivers behind that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right that we were pretty pleased with the cash delivery of last year. That has not been magic. That has been just the result of putting focus of the entire organization back on what good cash management means. coming from operations, coming through a disciplined capital expenditure, and coming through a very disciplined working capital management. And I think we have been seeing the fruits of that. All the KPIs going in the right direction. And yes, we want to step up the cash generation of our business. Where can it go? That is what we're going to see. But in a way, we want to build on the level we delivered last year to further enhance it. So we are ambitious on that side.
Okay. And a question on the CMD upcoming in Amsterdam. Somebody's asking, are you able to give some idea of the kind of topics that will be discussed? Not expecting details, but what are the kind of, what's in scope within the CMD? You can comment.
I think obviously, we want to keep the curiosity extremely high for that event, and I'm sure it will be a fantastic event. No surprise that that obviously we will use the occasion to share with you where we are on our journey under Renew Danone, we are on our journey to become again a category leader where we play. And so to project ourselves beyond 2024. So stay tuned until mid of June in Amsterdam.
Okay. I'm going to just quick fire, Jürgen, last couple of minutes. Question coming in about the Europe and US contributing to the growth of 3-5. You know, as you talked about the 3-5 organic and then Europe and US. Do you expect Europe and US to be within the 3-5 on a sustainable basis?
Well, frankly, I believe when you look at the portfolio we have, when you look at the way we have been resetting the different platforms, I believe that both North America and Europe have a very performing a group of assets together. And as we are progressing into winning share in this market, and as we are progressing into helping the market and the categories to grow, especially on dairy, we want both of them to contribute a fair share to our growth within the 3-5% corridor. So in that sense, these are two very important platforms for us. When you take the combined, you look at a big part of our portfolio. So they will need to contribute.
A question is, can Jürgen share what his latest thoughts around overall COGS inflation for the year might be?
COGS inflation, as I said before, we're going to see inflation, relatively low levels of inflation, driven by a few elements which I quoted before. So there is inflation still there. Volatility could be higher. That's the watch out we need to keep in mind because of what's happening, especially in the Middle East. So that's something to be monitored closely, especially on barrel and sea transporter.
Someone came back on the cash flow. With the cash flow improving, any thoughts around M&A plans, capital allocation, buyback priorities, if you could address that?
I think we have been very clear that we want to have a more balanced view into portfolio rotation. We have done a couple of disposals, and obviously we will not stop there pruning the portfolio, but because the balance sheet looks better today than it was 2 years ago, we feel that we have now the ability to look also now more into acquisitions, responsible acquisitions, I would say, which means looking for things which are spot on our strategy and which contribute to our value creation journey, driving growth, driving profitability, including EPS, but also making sure that we get the ROIC sustainable into double-digit territory. So yes, you will look more balanced into that.
All right, listen, Jürgen, I think we're on the buzzer on the hour, so I'm going to try and keep to time. So as always, you've been very generous with your time. I hope that's been an interesting session for all the investors that are tuning in.
Thank you, Rowan. Thank you, everybody. Bye. See you soon. Bye. Bye.